Ah, love Rush. Welcome back to Backbone Radio. Senator Brophy, did you know that Rush is a libertarian band? You can kind of tell by their lyrics.
You know, they've been around for a lot longer than you've been listening to rock and roll, I think.
You know, I'm not, I think we're almost the same age, so. But I just remember listening to them back in the 80s, and it was pretty sweet back then, still pretty sweet today.
Still is. Best bumper music in the business right here.
Yeah, right here on Backbone Radio. So anyway, we were talking about the state essentially going bankrupt over Medicaid and some common sense ideas that you put forward that got shot down by the Democrats who seem to think that we can live this way indefinitely. What's the future for a bill like that?
Well, one way or the other, we are going to do this. The question is, do you do it? You know, it's like being prepared for any upcoming disaster. Do you wait until 2 hours before the hurricane comes ashore to board up your windows and go by the water and find out that it's already off the shelf or the price has gone up or something like that? Or do you do it, you know, just 2 weeks in advance when you know these things are coming, you have that stuff done, and then you do the windows in the appropriate amount of time and things along those lines? That's the question, because this is a disaster coming. There is no way around it. And it's actually, you know, I believe, looking at what the mess that the federal government is in, for crying out loud, you know, $1 trillion, a little more than $1 trillion of deficit spending each year, a $15.5 trillion debt. At some point, they're going to, one thing's going to happen here, one way or the other. We're going to break the gridlock in Washington, D.C., I hope, because I would rather implement really bad ideas and prove that they don't work so that we can fix them, or implement the conservative ideas that I think will actually get us out of this problem, out of this mess sooner. And if the latter happens, they're going to stop spending or sending to the states as much money for these federally subsidized programs as what they have been sending. And then we're going to have to figure out how to take care of the truly needy here in Colorado with the program that they've gotten used to, because all of the alternatives have been put out of business by government spending, for crying out loud. It used to be there were better ways, more efficient ways of doing this. Now we're stuck with government.
So we have to do the right thing.
Or the Democrats are going to win everything, and they're going to increase taxes and strangle the economy, and then we'll go broke, and then we can start over.
It can be Jimmy Carter's. We're kind of in Jimmy Carter's second term right now. It could be Jimmy Carter's third term
The logical conclusion of what happens when you can no longer borrow money from anybody else and all of the federal funding is fueled by the creation of brand new money by the Fed.
The cows come home at some point.
I don't want to live through that. I want to fix it now while we still can. While it just causes a little bit of pain and discomfort, we can still fix it. So I think we'll do this. The question is, you know, do we do it when we have a little more time to implement these things and maybe do a half and half test? Do we do the managed care plan for half of the recipients and increase co-pays and participation fees for the other half and see which works better?
And maybe give the individuals the choice of which one they would like.
Right, you're going to do one or two of these. One of the two of these. Right now, the pilot programs that we have with managed care, you have to volunteer to be in them. The feds won't let us force people into them. That's one of the things I was seeking with this little tiny Medicaid waiver I was trying to get the Democrats to support. And truly, you know, with a split legislature and a Democrat governor, we're going to have to link arms as Democrats and Republicans and walk down this path together, or it's just not going to happen.
Well, wouldn't you say that doing this Medicaid fix is probably easier than the other sort of elephant in the room, which is Amendment 23, because that actually requires a vote by the people to fix, whereas Medicaid could be done by the legislature?
Yes. Although I got to tell you, on Amendment 23, I don't know that we have to fix it anymore, because the plus 1% of it
already went
away. Yeah, we're just down now to where we have to fund K-12 education at inflation plus population growth.
And does you that know give as enough well room for the other things, though, in the budget?
Well, it's not easy, but, you know, the federal government purposefully understates inflation, so there's kind of a ratchet down on this education spending coming up anyway. I mean, it's these other areas of spending in the budget that are out of control. We need to put more of our prisoners that are in the public held prisons into privately held prisons. I think it's about $9 million a year in savings for every 1,000 people that we move from the publicly owned prisons to the privately held prisons. And, oh, by the way, the privately held prisons actually pay property taxes to the locals in the
counties. Helps local communities.
It helps a lot in these local communities, and if they get shut down, then they're going to stop paying their taxes.
What now? Is there any traction on that in the legislature?
Well, again, you know, the Democrat Party is closely aligned with the Public Employees Union, and the Public Employees Union is adamantly opposed to doing that. But we're fighting with, that's part of the budget deal that is being wrangled behind the scenes right now in the Colorado General Assembly. So that's coming up. You asked earlier what's big and what's coming. Mm-hmm. The budget is the biggest thing that we have to do. And with a split chamber, it is not going to be a budget that anybody likes.
It's got to be that linking arm effect.
It is, and we have to balance this budget.
I have to admit, I like Governor Hickenlooper. Do you find him easy to work with as a legislator? Or how kind of he seems so likable. How likable is he?
Oh, he's a nice guy. He is the consummate politician, though. He is one of those guys, the typical politician going back forever, tries to look like he's not a politician and never take a tough position on anything if you can possibly put it off. So, you know, never stick his neck out on anything and wait till the next election. You know, again, the typical politician is more concerned about the next election than he is the next generation.
Well, I have to admit, if they run adult like Dan Mays again, I will vote for Hickenlooper. I hate to say that, but I just can't vote for a weirdo.
Well, he's a nice guy, the governor is, and I see it as my job to hold his feet to the fire on things like Medicaid and on things like the state budget and say, you know what, it's time for you to show some leadership here. And also on these oil and gas issues, he has so far dodged taking any real position related to hydraulic fracturing in Colorado.
He seemed to be sort of tepidly on board with it.
On board with defense of hydraulic fracturing at the moment. But, right now, the only concrete action that he has taken is to impanel a blue ribbon commission by
another
name.
We never have
enough
of those. I mean, there was barely any last time around with the last governor, so we definitely need to catch up and have more this time around.
There were so many last time around, they ran out of blue ribbons, and so they stopped calling them blue ribbon commissions.
Yellow ribbon.
So now it's all to be determined, and it's a commission to look at this problem. The one difference is, I'm going to keep holding the feet to the fire, take a position. We've actually been hydraulically fracturing wells for 60-some-odd years.
It's pretty conclusive. It does not affect the groundwater.
And it's actually getting safer and safer over time, believe it or not. And this was cool. We have finally bent the curve on importation of foreign oil. For the first time since the Carter years, we are importing less as a percentage of our total usage than we have before. We're up to almost 50% now.
And this fracking and the oil that's derived of it is helping us to be able to do more in-house.
It is. That is one of the main reasons. The combination of horizontal drilling and hydraulic fracturing those horizontal bores has produced a lot more oil and a lot more natural gas. So much natural gas, we don't know what to do with this stuff, is great.
Oh, it's a wonderful form of fuel. Now, out in your neck of the woods, eastern Colorado, is there much of that going on?
We have traditional natural gas, but then when you come into the western part of my new Senate district and the western part of my existing Senate district, a lot more of the Niobrara Formation is there, and we're going to be pulling a lot of oil out of that formation.
Good for those communities.
Oh, it's good for the communities. It's good for America. Look what our annual trade deficit is. If we actually ramp up production, and we can do it when prices are high right now, we can wipe out about 80% of our trade deficit. If you want to balance the federal budget and grow the economy, that's the way to do it.
Do we have enough refineries to bring in all this new fuel and deal with it appropriately?
Well, we actually have refinery capacity. We need more, but we're refining. We don't import hardly any refined products, so we're refining all that we use. We're actually exporting refined. We're actually exporting more refined product than we're importing.
Good.
So that combination, we do need new refineries. As I think will naturally happen, ethanol production will ramp down as the world needs more corn for food. I think ethanol will actually ramp down. We'll actually need to replace.
I hate to say it to a corn farmer, but I'd like to see it go away altogether.
That's okay. I think it's going to go away over the next 5 to 10 years of its own volition, and that'll be a good thing. But we will need to replace that refining capacity because don't forget, right now what ethanol is doing in reality is converting natural gas into a liquid fuel. Because the energy, the heat energy that is used to convert corn to ethanol is natural gas. So right now we're converting natural gas into a liquid fuel. We'll need to replace that refining capacity at some point.
Okay, that makes sense. And hopefully we'll start to go in that direction. I think there people are starting to realize that ethanol is not the fuel of the future. And in fact, if anything, is it's got some hazards. And problems of its own, pretty significant ones.
I disagree with that. I think it's a fine fuel. I just think that there's a higher and better use for that corn and feeding it to hogs and chickens and beef so that we can eat the meat and have a higher standard of diet around the world. And that's what I really want to do. But you know what? None of this is going to happen if we don't get this economic problem solved, for crying out loud. If we don't solve the Medicaid problem here in Colorado, we can't fund education properly and have a workforce prepared for the 21st century. And if we don't solve the fiscal problem back at the federal level, all this other stuff, whether we can help college kids pay for their birth control, their booze, and their spring breaks, that's going to be off the table. We're going to be trying to figure out how to feed ourselves if we can't get our economic house in order here. And
Amen.
The Democrats are waving the flag over here. Pay no attention to the economy. We're going to talk about contraceptives and ogre Republicans who don't want to pay for your birth control, your spring break, and your booze.
We're such downers.
I know.
We're such downers.
I said, call your dad. If you want, to a college co-ed. And by the way, Ms. Fluke was kind of a fake college co-ed. Turns out she's a 30-year-old professional activist who chose to go to Georgetown so she could take on this issue. But that's beside the point. All the rest of them who want us to pay for their birth control, I ain't doing that. Call your dad if you need someone to pay for your spring break, your booze, or your birth control, okay?
Amen. And with that, we will say goodbye to Senator Brophy. Thanks for coming in. It's been terrific.
You bet. It's been fun.
I think I'm going to go have a drink, have a party, whatever else is in that line. So anyway, we'll see. We'll talk again soon. You're listening to Backbone Radio.
Oh, yeah.
Now, back to Backbone Radio.
Well, you heard the man. Turn it up. This is Krista Kafer, and you're listening to Backbone Radio on 710 KNUS or 1460 AM KZNT, or possibly you're listening online, so you could be anywhere in the world. Our studio line is 303-696-1971 if you want to call in and chat with me. We've got a few minutes before our next guest, and I wanted to direct you to something so that when we come back on the air, actually not for the next segment, but for the segment after that, you will be well prepared. I'm sure all of you, and I mean every one of you, read and probably cut out for, to put in your scrapbook, the op-ed that I wrote earlier this week. I had an op-ed in the Denver Post. It also made it into the Rifle Citizen Telegram and also the Greeley Tribune. And it was an op-ed on Monday. I think it was run Tuesday or Wednesday in the other papers, but all about the cookie bill or the cake bill or whatever sweet name you want to give it. There is two bills running through the legislature right now. There's Senate Bill 48 by Senator Gail Schwartz, and there's also House Bill 1027 by Representative Laura Bradford. And they're both a little bit different. Both have made it through their respective bodies and are now sort of languishing on the other side. I like both bills for different reasons. I love sweets. I have to admit that is probably my driving, not just my libertarian instincts, but also my love of food is probably the reason I like these bills as much as I do. And I imagine that many of you didn't know before you read and clipped out my op-ed to put on your refrigerator that it is illegal to bake something in your kitchen and then sell it. So let's say you want, a friend of yours is getting married or maybe an acquaintance, and they say, you make beautiful cakes. Can you make a cake for my wedding? You could give that cake away, but you couldn't sell them that cake. And given the fact to make a really fancy cake takes a lot of time, for a good friend, you might give it to them as a wedding gift, but for an acquaintance or a stranger, you might want to charge for your time. It's interesting. I mean, I always thought, hey, I could bake up some goods. I could take it over to the local fair and sell them. Not so. Not allowed. Now, in 26 states around the country, home-based bakeries are allowed. So if you had to want to make cake or bread or other things that are, quote, non-potentially hazardous foods. And I had to kind of unpack that statement. I thought, what is a non-potentially hazardous food? Well, that would be things like breads, cakes, muffins, because potentially hazardous foods are things like meat, milk, cooked vegetables. Those items, when they spoil, become hazardous. They carry or can carry different kinds of bacteria and whatnot that can make people very, very sick. But as those of you who have bought bread and forgot about it and left it in the cabinet, bread does not become hazardous. It just becomes kind of gross. It can get moldy, it can get stale, but it doesn't get hazardous in the same way that meat or cooked vegetables or milk does. So this would allow for home-based bakeries, just, you know, ordinary people who are not full-time bakers, to make things like cookies, cakes, breads, etc., and sell them to people to be eaten off the premises. And one of the things that I like about Senate Bill 48 is that in addition to things like breads and cakes, it also allows individuals to sell things like spices, teas, dehydrated produce, seeds, nuts, honey, and candy, as well as fresh eggs. And for those of you who know me, I have four hens, and these gals, I just give away their eggs. But if I were to ever sell someone a couple of eggs, I would be breaking the law. So therefore, I just give them away. But it would allow for, you know, individuals that keep, I'd have to probably keep more than four chickens to make it financially viable. But if I wanted to have, you know, have a few more hens, if it was allowed within my zoning, then I could actually sell up to 250 dozen eggs a month. And, you know, it's, for me, eating fresh eggs that are raised or that from hens that are kept humanely is a priority, which is why I have my own hens. But I like the idea of cottage industries, people who are making things and selling them from their own home. And I like the sort of broader list of things that is included in Senate Bill 48. What do I like about the House bill? House Bill 1027 doesn't have any cap. So if I wanted to, you know, if people found my eggs to be particularly tasty and I made $10,000 in a year off of my delicious eggs, then it wouldn't matter. But if I were to hit a cap of $5,000 under Senate Bill 48, then if I went over that, then I would be running afoul of the law. That's pretty good. So there are things to commend both of these bills, and we are very fortunate that in not the upcoming slot, but a little later on in the program, we will have a chance to speak with State Representative Laura Bradford and also State Senator Gail Schwartz, a big fan of both bills. And what I would like to see and what my op-ed is pointing to is I'd like to see these folks get together and come up with a bill that combines the best attributes of both. And you know what? It's okay to have a few more hearings. It's okay to kind of iron this out. What's not okay, as far as I'm concerned, is these bills languishing indefinitely and then dying before the legislature is over. So if anything, I want to just encourage these two women of the General Assembly to get together, come up with a common bill. So I'm excited about that later on. In our next segment, we're going to be talking to a friend of mine. This is actually my former boss from the Heritage Foundation. He is the director of the Center for Policy Innovation. When I was working there, he was actually, I believe, vice president for domestic policy. I may not be getting his name correct. But one of the most brilliant people that I know, I used to say he had a mind, and I should say he has a mind like a diamond, multifaceted and brilliant. And so he'll be on the show. He is actually now the director for this new Center of Policy Innovation, which is looking at creative ways of solving some of our most urgent problems. And he's going to be a great addition to the show. We'll have him. Then we'll talk about our sweet cake bill. And then we will have our small business moment. And then we'll get back to sort of looking at the past week and looking at what's ahead. One of the things you can expect from me on when I host the station is that I like to talk about what's happened the week before and what we can expect in the week ahead. And one of the things that I like to talk about is some of the things that our friends are doing. In this last week, the Centennial Institute, which is out of Colorado Christian University, had two wonderful events, one on school choice and the other on the media. One was a half-day event, one was an evening event. I had the wonderful privilege of attending the daytime, the half-day event, and which at its sort of capped off with a wonderful speech by Cal Thomas, the famous, well, I think he's famous, editorial writer, and it was just terrific. So if you've got something coming up in the year ahead and I'm hosting, please let me know, because I would love to say, here are some events that our friends at the Independence Institute or Centennial Institute or other fantastic conservative and libertarian organizations are doing here in our state so that people can attend, because I think this is important. Well, we've got the music on. We're going to go ahead and take a station break, but when we get back, there'll be more fantastic things to follow.